D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description. All right, welcome back to D&D Versus, the show where one dungeon master with a lump of coal for a heart takes on one player with a gift. I'm Inaudible, your dungeon master, and joining me this week is
Nathan York. I'll be playing Chris Single, the shredded revenge body fighter that used to be Santa.
He's going to eat, and his enemies are going to pray for his love and mercy.
He's looking to bring laughter and joy to all the girls and boys, and also some righteous fury to those who wronged him.
Oh boy, I think we got a sideshow already. The Adventures of Chris Single. Well, let's see how far Chris Single makes it. But before we dive into a recap of last episode, if you could start us off with a fact or backstory of Chris Single's original adventure before he found himself in this world.
Yeah, so Chris dealt with a lot of insecurity and concern for, you know, his ex-wife. He really thought he could win her back, so he formed a warlock pact, a demon pact, with his brother who cheated on his wife with him. So Chris was willing to sacrifice a lot and make himself very uncomfortable in order to try and win back the love of a woman who would never love him again. And it was an incredible story, all in all.
You know what I realized that story reminds me of? Because I just happened to see this on a TV while I was at a hotel room for a friend's wedding last week. There's Something About Mary, where Ben Stiller and like all of those skeevy dudes are just like working together to try to compete, yet also work against each one of each other to get Cameron Diaz's character.
And it worked to about the same comical result. Both Krampus and Chris failed to win the hand of Miss Claus.
Speaking of trying to win a hand, last episode we started with Cody Miller playing Normal Guy, or Norm, as he infiltrated Ogma Oggy's stronghold in the Feywild. Cody was, or Norm rather, was semi-successful, managing to get into the house, managing to trick Oggy's assistant slash butler slash best friend, Verfall, into guiding him through the house to the items that he was seeking. So he acquired a pan flute and a key to free the dog of Oggy's ex-wife, Cerberus. However, in his escape and in his attempt to get out, Norm was not successful, and being made of bones was a little bit too tempting a snack for Cerberus outside. When resurrection took place and Chris Single came on the scene, he had been brought into the house. He had already been examined by Oggy, who is something of a Renaissance man, a thinker and a scientist. He's a deity of knowledge, as it were. Laid some heavy revelations on Chris Single, which, you know, I got to say thank you to Nate for just letting me do just a one-ton grand piano Looney Tunes exposition dump on your head as soon as you came into this character.
I think that Chris getting cold hard truth is one of my favorite things to encounter, because then it's just like, well, there's no fighting to be had here. We just have to try and get out of this puzzle.
I wish I could say I planned this out, but I did not intend for it to be the divorcee demigod storyline intersecting with a divorcee character who's also gone on his own healing journey and is just uniquely positioned to be like perfect to talk to Oggy, but also has the, like, you know, the emotional maturity to speak to Oggy from a place of like not being a potentially problematic influence. So Oggy revealed that there are incursions happening, that this entity known as the Groom that we've already heard of from previous characters is able to break through more and more and more because of the death and rebirth cycle that Chris is now the fourth in the chain for. That being said, Oggy revealed that the way to save the world and stop the Groom from breaking through is going to be ending that cycle and sacrificing himself. There were a lot of tears shed, but, you know, some lessons learned. And I think we all grew a little bit thanks to it. Chris, you awoke back in the real world, or at least in the material plane. Miss Cleo is sitting beside you, but strangely enough, you also awoke with a millipede circled on your chest. That's where we're going to begin. You've just woken up. Miss Cleo is also sort of opening her eyes, and you hear her telepathically speaking in your head. That was strange. I was with you, but I was not with you. It was as if I was following as a phantom. I saw everything that you did, but it was like a dream where I could only watch. And you're back. And I know that you are the one who has replaced Norman.
Yeah. Norm was a special guy. Unfortunately, he met his end to Cerberus. But I feel expertly prepared for what's next. After we go get Buddy and Groucho and Ludlow, we can make our way to Vanilla to go rescue Alpha Case.
You see her shoulders sort of relax and she looks very relieved and says, I had presumed, based on the character I saw you display in the Feywild with Ogma, that you would be a person who would be willing to uphold those oaths and those promises. And I'm glad to hear that we can resume our search for Groucho and the others. However, it seems as if in our time in respite in the other realm that the caravan has relocated and we will have to track them across the woods. Are you skilled in tracking?
Well, I wouldn't call myself skilled, but I used to, in a previous job, had to keep track of and monitor all the girls and boys across the world. You know, I'm sure if I try my hand in this world, I should be able to do something. And if I can't, then we're just going to keep trying anyway. This is the one thing we're never going to do, Miss Cleo. We're never going to give up.
Give me a persuasion roll.
That's a flat 10.
You see her sort of implacid, like implacable, with regards to your statement about never giving up. You don't see the sort of like fire in her eyes that you would hope to see. Instead, what you do notice with the 10 is that her eyes do go a little bit wide at your mention of being able to monitor all the boys and girls in the world. And there's a certain hesitation. You see her kind of edge away a little bit, but there is a fascination because remember, this is a priestess who is concerned with knowledge beyond realms. And that sort of, you can tell that sort of perception, that sort of power of scrying, mass scrying is so fascinating to her.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't like an innate ability. That was part of the Santa Corp structure. I had the ability to do that. Operating in that capacity.
So you are saying that there are certain places within a realm that may have certain powers of resonance. That seems familiar to me with this realm. Perhaps there is a place in our realm that has the power of resonance similar to the one you are describing from your home realm.
It's more than possible. You speak of Mother as a deity, and we knew of Brother who was a giant brain, right? There's all kinds of potential abilities that would match something like that. And besides, there's probably one of me running around in this realm. Are you familiar with Santa Claus here?
And she says, Santa Claus. And you see her look off into the middle distance like she's in a Zoloft ad.
Well, beside the point, we have a mission. We know what we need to do. And we're going to do it. And I promise you that I will give everything in me to make sure that we move forward.
She nods, and she gestures with a hand towards the tree line at the back of the sort of natural amphitheater that I described Norm falling asleep in, that you have now found yourself in. And she says, the way back towards the circus and towards the other things that Ludlow and Groucho may have gone off to investigate is to the north through these woods. I will let you take the lead, and I can assist. However, I don't know how useful I will be. This is my first time ever being above on the surface.
Right, and I appreciate you making the journey up. I know that Alpha Case is close to you and that we are going to make our way to Vanilla. And I feel like I should let you know the groom is more dangerous than we thought.
She nods and says, yes, I have long feared the groom. Elder Sister had told us for ages past that she loves the stories of our realms and so many other realms, and has always taken what could be described as pride in being the shield of the groom's chaotic nature from penetrating into any of those realms and stories. As you all walk over the grass and into the woods, By the time you've come out of the Feywild, it is now sunset again. An entire day has passed. And so light is growing dim. You can tell just in the dim light that's still penetrating the thick foliage that this path is splitting in two. One is going to the northwest, one is going to the northeast. As you stand in the woods and you listen, this is what you're hearing. The way this is going to work is each time you reach an intersection as you go through the woods, I'll play a new mix of those sounds. Now, if you want to try to gauge which direction one sound might be, give me a perception roll and I'll tell you how good you are at picking apart the sounds in their respective directions.
An 8.
Unfortunately, with a roll of 8, I can't give you direction in terms of which way one sound or the other is coming from.
All right. There's a lot of organ coming through. It's hard to know which way. Real quick, Miss Cleo, if you had to pick between the right or the left, what would you feel is best?
Organs require people to play them. If there is somebody performing so loudly that we are perceiving it through the woods, they may just have an audience. And it is my preference, as it has ever been since I set out on this journey, to avoid exposure to multiple people whenever possible or avoidable. So I will try to steer us away from the organ music. I will actually roll perception for Miss Cleo to see how well she can tell. Okay, so she gets a really good perception roll. She is going to say, the organ music, unfortunately, appears to be coming directly from the north of us. So either path to me is just the same as the other.
Oh, that's a shame. Let's give it a try. We'll learn more information as we proceed. We'll try and steer away from the organ music because I agree we don't want to be in a crowd right now. So let's take the eastern path.
Going down the northeast, the path begins to gently slope downward, but eventually the path begins cutting against a slight shelf of thick tree line until you're eventually walking through a ravine that stinks of methane. It smells of rotting carcasses, like animals have kind of dumped carrion down here.
The stench of death is in the air.
Stench of death is in the air. My man, take inspiration for that one.
All right, I think we should go the other way, Miss Cleo. It smells awful, but let's first try and see if we can hone in on any sounds around us. Just carefully, quietly.
So right now, you do have a fork from the ravine. It's maybe a 30-foot stretch of this sort of like dumping ground that looks like sort of a dried-up riverbed. You have, again, a choice to go northwest or northeast from your current position. The northwest, I will say, does climb more steadily uphill than the northeastern path. This is what you're hearing.
It sounds like we're further away from the organ.
Yes. It's a tremendous relief. So if you would like to roll perception.
That's a 23.
You can tell that the fastest way to get to the capybara noise that must be Mr. Beepo is to go northeast from here.
All right. The northeast is the way we must proceed. It sounds like we're closer to the cat, too, so we need to tread carefully.
Understood. And as we get closer to wherever Mr. Beepo might be confined, I will maintain a stealthier moveset. The ravine eventually levels out. The stench is left behind. You eventually begin moving through this hanging willow forest that is filled with fireflies, and it's a very different scene than what you previously left. As you pass underneath these hanging branches and these thick, green, cascading sheafs of willow leaves, you begin to hear skittering around you overhead, and you begin to hear laughter. Give me a perception roll.
12.
And let me roll for Miss Cleo as well. You definitely feel something shift in your pack. Somebody lifted something out. And Miss Cleo points over your shoulder and says, the grabby claw. And you see the grabby claw sort of bouncing through the air and then landing up on a tree and then just hanging on a branch about 20 feet overhead. and you hear the skittering laughter sort of bubbling around the grabby claw.
Well, that's not ideal.
Can I make out what creatures are holding the grabby claw?
You don't see anything, but you do hear a voice. Hey, this belongs to us. I mean, it looks more like us than it does you. How about we go get a branch and stick it on the end of a rotten crab apple, and that can be your toy? So that way we're all matching a little bit better. What do you say to that?
Well, as a person who used to deliver toys, I'll let you know right now that there's nothing about that that's a toy. It's very dangerous, and it was in my keeping because it might be useful down the road.
I don't have much in my pack as far as, like, toys. Is there any way that a toy or item could have come with me? Because I feel like Chris would always have something, like, in his back pocket in case he ran into a sad kid or something. Like, even though he's no longer, you know, Santa, he just wants to be able to make someone smile.
All right, give me a D100 roll.
Oh, boy. 83.
Okay. You reach into your back pocket and you find what looks like just a handkerchief. But you know that if you unfold it and refold it, it can automatically be refolded into up to 4 different styles of a hat.
How about a trade? I've got something that'll be much more fun for you and much less dangerous.
And they say, we're listening.
So I'm going to fold it into hat number 1 and place it on my head.
Give me a performance roll for this sales pitch.
Oh, not taking the luck feat is always the wrong choice. That was a 6.
Sorry. My fingers is a little cold out.
Give me 1 second. So you can stick with that 6. Or, because I said that the hat has up to 4 different styles, you've shown them 1 style so far. If you can zhuzh up your next 3 style presentations and character, I will give you advantage on the roll.
Okay.
Go for it.
Well, Here's what else it can do. Check it out. Oh boy. Well,
hang on, you gotta give me some sauce to describe what Chris is doing. How theatrical is it?
Chris is not up on this one. He's not actually super familiar with this toy. So he's gonna try. So he's like,
it turns into hats. I promise I can't do it right now. I think I'm too stressed because that's how dangerous this item is.
So the dragons say, you know, it'd be fun for us. You're clearly on your way to something. You seem like a man about town. You got a little date with you. And Miss Cleo immediately stiffens and starts saying, oh, no. I am betrothed to. Hey, listen, we don't need the whole story, lady. You're out on the town for the evening. What if you say a few in exchange for this little tool that you want back? You give us the hat, and you let us, you let us spruce up your outfit and your getup. What do you say?
Spruce up my outfit. I mean, I'm always looking for a new style to wear, and since I'm in a place I'm unfamiliar with, perhaps you can give me something that would be more fitting.
And you hear this sequence of 5 bubble popping noises and a quintet of pixie dragons of different colors are all sitting on the branch looking down at you, kind of doing one of, well, I think we can do that. How about we start with the lady since she's got the more blank canvas of the two? And the 5 dragons swoop down and they proceed to use their color spray ability to turn Miss Cleo's white clerical robe into a full-on tie-dye garish rainbow mess. And then after they're done spinning around her and doing that, they do the same thing to you. You both look like you are psychedelic performers from like a 70s revue show.
You know, I gotta say, I've worn a lot of colors in my years. This is the first time I've worn this many at once. I think it's quite lovely. Quite fetching. You've really done a service for me. So in true honor, I exchange with you this hat for the grabby claw.
One of them snatches the hat up while the other 4 fly down, and with their noses, they just flick it off of the branch, and you now have the grabby claw back.
Have you seen a capybara?
They all look at each other and snicker and say, he's directly to the north of here.
Well, That's another thing I owe you. Perhaps when I return, if I find something that might be of interest to you, I'll bring it. You've been quite helpful.
Give me a persuasion or a charisma roll.
That's a 9.
Give me a perception roll as well.
16.
As you kind of like doff your hat to them, you have the grabby claw back in your possession and you begin to walk away. You definitely notice that one of the pixie dragons does that thing where they open their mouth and you hear just like the barest snatch of a sound as if they're about to say something. And then the other four kind of like scramble to shut it up as you begin heading north.
Okay. I'm going to whisper to Miss Cleo. I think they're leading us into a trap.
She says, do you think that we should then veer to the northwest, for it does sound as if we are heading in the direction of Mr. Bebo, based on the sounds we have been hearing.
Might be smart, but we should head with caution. They did say to the north, they didn't say whether it was to the east or west.
So, because of the coloration of your clothing, you're going to roll stealth with disadvantage.
I'm already rolling at disadvantage because I'm heavily armored, so.
Oh, well, Miss Cleo is now rolling at disadvantage, and she actually had decent stealth.
Okay, 5 was my stealth roll.
So you all are walking down this path, and just about the time that I would ask you to make a perception roll, you hear the lightest of footfalls behind you. And before you can even turn around and see if it's a small animal skittering across the path behind you or whatever it might be, you feel something sharp and pointy pressed into your back. And you hear a voice saying,
all right, all right. Hands up. Gonna march you into our camp, and I want to know what you're poking around looking for. Nobody's supposed to be back here. Not even the circus workers supposed to be in this part of the woods. So just don't make any trouble. Walk forward, and you and your very fancily dressed companion might just get to see the show tonight. Do you understand?
Very much so. Apologies, we were lost. Some pixie dragons led us down the wrong path.
Pixie dragons, you say? Well, most people know better than to run afoul of those things or to trust them. So either you're quite foolish, or you're using a bullshit story.
I'm not actually from around here, so I gotta be honest. Pixie dragons aren't high on my things to know about this realm.
Well, don't worry about it. No blood need be spilled, just being cautious, as we are.
Are you going to allow him to lead you down the path? He's actually continuing to lead you down the path you were already headed anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to move with him.
Just as a fun aside, this is kind of the way we were headed anyway, so this kind of works to our favor too. Apologies for scaring you or going the wrong way. We're hopefully trying to find some friends.
Understood. And I don't mean to be anything less than prudent. Just out here on some sensitive business, have to be careful that you're not working for the Jets or the Reds.
If you look over your shoulder, you would see that both of the Dragonborn that are holding you and Miss Cleo right now with their swords at your backs are both green Dragonborn. You're led into an open glen where the path sort of opens out into this sort of oval-shaped clearing. And there's a makeshift camp set up with a few horses and 4 other green dragonborn. They all seem to be packing up their horses and getting ready to go. 2 of the horses are tied to a cart that has one of those prison cages attached to it. I suppose you could call it a medieval pope mobile in a certain way, or a medieval prison car. The dragonborn who are leading you speak up and say,
Gil, found a couple of rustlers. Just thought you'd want to talk to them.
The tallest dragonborn, because that is how you can tell that he is the leader, turns around, dusting his hands from his horse and says,
well, all right, have a seat. Need to know what you're doing poking around here, and who you are.
Well, my name's Chris. This is Miss Cleo, and we're here looking for some friends of ours. We heard some sounds that might be similar to sounds that they might make, but ran into some pixie dragons who led us this way. And hope that you might be able to help us find them. And I can assure you that they are not affiliated in any way with the Jets or the Reds, because I've never heard of those names, and I have no idea who they are.
There are a couple of logs set up facing each other, and he takes a seat on one, gestures for you to take a seat on the other, and he kind of grins, and you can see his dragonborn fangs glinting.
Well, that's very good to hear that you're not a member of the Jets or the Reds. Problem is, though, that I do know your friends, if you're talking about the rather dour-looking captain man with the swords and whatnot, and the young canine-headed boy. And I'm assuming you're also referring to the rather large bear cat chipmunk thing.
I am.
We had hands on them, and we decided to use them to sweeten a deal.
Oh, you traded them away?
Yes.
That's okay. That means you know where they are now.
Yes. Well, I hope you won't take it as an offense, because my business has already been completed. And he kind of like tilts his head towards one of the horses pulling the wagon in the wagon itself.
You can see this rather large... Do you remember the scene in The Matrix where when they put Neo in the car to like extract the bug from his stomach? You basically see that sitting on the bed of the wagon.
The bug creature they pull from his belly button?
No. The device they use to pull the creature from his belly button.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a pretty cool hardware there.
He says, yes, we exchanged for it. We had a deal where we needed to offload some people to the carnival in exchange for their passage. We sweetened the deal due to the risk to the carnival with your friends. And in exchange, we got ourselves what may be one of the last few Dr. Frankenfurter original inventions. The skin extrapolator.
That seems right up Frankenfurter's alley. I, too, am familiar with his work. We are in hopes to maybe see him down the road.
Oh, really? Well, if you're looking for Dr. Frankenfurter, you might be fascinated by a little bit of a curiosity on this device.
And he waves you over to follow him to the wagon. And he says,
this device, Frankenfurter thinks of everything. Not only is it very good at extrapolating a person's skin, let's just say, for the sake of brevity, flaying them, but it actually keeps a record of skins that passes through the device, in case one might want a copy. It's a shifty fellow, and it's known that he's sort of a clandestine type. Must be he uses this for disguises. Now, to wit, let me show you a couple of the recent skins that were extracted using this device.
And he takes you over to the wagon, spins the device around so you can see this huge display, and sort of like a Barbie's dress-up game, where you're able to flip through to pick out which outfit you want printed. He flips through to the two most recent, and he says,
this one here is the Lady Kate Blanchett from the Refugee Island. And this one here is the famous detective gnome Columbo. So somebody's been using this thing, I don't know who it was, but somebody's been using this thing very recently. We're eager to get it off our hands and into Lord Hyrax's, because he can deal with that heat much better than we can.
Lord Hyrax is the commander of the realm?
He's the commander of Vanilla. He's the red dragon who rules over all, and me and my friends, me and my people here, have long sought his favor. We, the Green Party, have been shunted for too long, and there are murmurs of approval, and he says, but with this offering to him, in light of his son's disappearance...
And you hear kind of snickers around the camp.
I believe the Jets and Reds will find themselves at a loss to appease Lord Hyrax in a way that we can with this Dr. Frankenfurter original torture device.
Columbo skin being in there has me worried because we have encountered him in the past. So it could be that we encountered somebody who was wearing the skin of Columbo. What was Hyrax's son's name?
Oh, Hyrax's son is named Tracy.
And what color dragon is he, gents?
He's the son of a red dragon, so you'd be looking for a red dragon, wouldn't you?
Yes, red dragon.
Is Tracy a dragonborn, or is Tracy a full-fledged dragon?
No, Tracy is a full-fledged dragon. Vanilla worships our dragon lord and ancestor, our founder, but we dragonborn carry on the legacy and service to them as their subjects.
It is difficult to be subjugated, certainly. Well, I hope that this machine wins you the favor you need to be seen in the eyes of Hyrax. Well, I appreciate all that you have given us. Can you point me in the direction of where my friends might be?
Absolutely. You'll want to head towards the circus now. Follow this path,
and you might be able to take cover through the outhouses and the supply tents to find where they are being kept until they can be made more obliging to their new lot. However, if you wish to deal directly with the ringleader and the owner of the circus, proceed west from here. Follow the sound of the calliope music.
All right. Well, as your friends can contest, we aren't the quietest movers, the stealthiest navigators. Do you have anything or any ability that might give us an edge here?
He looks at the others, and he looks at the extractor and says, do you have something that you could trade for the extractor?
No. I don't believe carrying that will make us any quieter and moving, but the extractor is your ticket to respect, to honor, so I wouldn't take something so precious from you. But what I will say is that your guidance, your wisdom, your advice, and your company have been gift enough.
He says, friend, when you will find yourself in Vanilla, come to the house of Gil Stein of the Green Party, and I will treat you to many a drink. And understand this, we traded the dog boy, the dour swordsman, and the capybara fairly to the circus. So if you do deal with them, understand that whatever misgivings or interpretations you may have of how they are being treated and handled, that they did deal fairly, and that will be their perception of the proceedings. Understood?
I understand. A deal's a deal, even with a dirty dealer. But, Gil, you are well met, and I look forward to visiting the house of Gil Stein and sharing many a story about how you are now in good favor with Hyrax.
All right, give me a strength roll.
17.
You do the most amazing predator high five. Like, you hear the trees 20 feet in every direction actually shake from the thunderclap force of your two hands connecting and your biceps just... In anime when, like, the bicep flex sends out its own shockwave.
Absolutely. I think there's a glint in my eye and in his when we hold our hands in contact.
Oh, yeah. The camera perspective does, like, a full 720 before it, like, closes in on your clasped hands. It's perfect. So the Green Party saddles up, and they proceed to ride out with the Dr. Frankenfooter's invention. Miss Cleo is standing there saying, I'm glad that you were able to handle that. I admit, I seem to be at a loss for many of the cultural nuances with which you were able to engage him.
Well, I mean, this is your first time on the surface. There's all kinds of things that you have to do in order to ensure your safety. And what's most important and very, very good anytime you're interacting with others is to let them know how important and valuable they are and how incredibly important their own tasks are. They want to hear that first and foremost. And if you lead with kindness and honesty, and you give them the respect that they deserve, more often than not, they will treat you in kind.
You see her clasp her hands, and she nods and bows her head, and then you hear telepathically in your mind, Groucho is going to be quite fond of you, I think.
I can't wait to see you, Groucho.
Let us proceed.
I think we're terrible at stealth. I think we're better suited to greet the party in the front instead of in the back, unless you have a better idea about how we can go about rescuing our friends.
She looks in the distance as the Green Party's horses disappear around a bend into the woods, heading east towards the city of Vanilla, and she thinks, I believe that his advice and his attention to guiding us in how to deal with the circus's manager and owner directly was something of an implicit advice in itself. That the risk and consequences of trying to jailbreak our companions could be far worse than if we were to fail at direct diplomatic negotiations. To which end, he gave us a certain amount of advice as well.
Well, we don't have anything, at least, in the way of bargaining chips. But I think that it's correct that we have to go directly and deal with them face to face.
So we shall approach them honestly, then?
Absolutely.
Good. He said that proceeding to the west from here would lead to the main camp. If you proceed west, you do eventually begin seeing these tents and these wagons that are set up for a circus. You're coming to the back end of the circus, where you can see the main tent is off in the distance to the northwest of where you are currently approaching from. And you can see that there is music playing. You can even see lights and hear people gathering. It seems as if they are set up for the show for the night. As you get closer, you can also hear the criers, the people that are calling for games, saying that this is the last time that Mr. Megorium's wonderful circus show will be in town. We have a future engagement that we have to hit the road for, so tonight only, join the show, join the fun. Come one, come all. This is the last time we will be in Vanilla. Come and see wonders your eyes will never witness anywhere in this broad world of Umbar. As you approach these tents, you begin to see the performers practicing in the back area, like the trapeze artists are doing their routine and everything like that. And of course, one funny thing about the idea of a circus in D&D fantasy world is that the standards for a circus have got to be so much higher, like in a world where magic is fairly like quotidian. So, you know, the trapeze artists are obviously using like cantrips and things like that to extend their moves, to float a little bit hot, like, you know, farther. The safety net is not actually a safety net. It's a fire net. The clown car has an enchanted ring around the door so that each clown is literally having like reduce cast on themselves. So they're shrinking down to 1/8 the size so they can fit like 200 clowns in there that just immediately enlarge when they come back out. You're just seeing all these performers and everybody practicing and getting ready for the show that night. Give me an investigation or an insight roll. Actually, let's go with investigation.
That's 12.
There's obviously the main tent, which is painted, you know, peppermint red and white. But there are also a few other tents that could potentially belong to somebody who's a well-to-do, at least as far as the circus is concerned. You see one tent that is also painted red and white. You see another tent that's a little bit grander than the others and doesn't seem to have like the same amount of utilitarian stuff surrounding it. Like it doesn't have as many boxes and things like that. And then you see another tent that is very long, more rectangular, and also, again, does not have nearly as many boxes or utilitarian items around it. And you can see somebody walking in with a tray of food.
I think we might be looking into that long tent. Again, we both agreed that we have to go at this in a more diplomatic fashion. Should we try and poke around first before engaging in talk?
I believe that conducting ourselves in the way that average people would conduct themselves would perhaps help us blend in and not raise up any defenses or alarm bells before they need to be. Perhaps we should proceed around to the front. If there's some way to guarantee our admission, then perhaps we should procure means of looking like average attendees and members of this worship service.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to think we're average dressed like this, but perhaps we can lean in.
You mean to disguise and infiltrate?
Well, we could say that we are prospective performers, right?
Yes, I believe that that is not entirely untruthful.
I don't think it is either. And I gotta say, since we're both unfamiliar with where we're at right now, we could really sell that. What do you think?
Yes, understood. Perhaps then that would get us greater knowledge and introduction to the structure with which they conduct their business and performances, which could then lead us to finding our companions. I will let you take the lead and I will support as needed.
Is anyone around us right now that looks like an employee of the circus?
Oh yeah, plenty of people. I'm picturing you both kind of stopped on the sort of like cover of the tree line for the time being, and you're at the back end of the circus. So like I said, there are plenty of people walking around that clearly work for the circus that are practicing their acts. They're warming up their magic tricks and things like that. You know, you have a magician who is currently manipulating water to do like a fantastic show of sculptures and like shaping it in the form of like a dragon that is flying around in circles and doing air tricks. You have other performers who are doing like acrobatics together. So you kind of have like three pockets of people that are rehearsing. I mentioned the trapeze artists already. They're on a high. You can pick any of those three people, or you can venture deeper in to try to find somebody else.
Miss Cleo, just real quick. What's the thing that you were really good at when you were younger, perhaps? A skill, juggling, maybe like singing or performing?
I am extremely adept at using my proboscis to remove the section of humanoids' brains that contain their memories while leaving them completely alive.
That's not really for a general audience kind of performance. I'm thinking more of like, you know, maybe you could do cartwheels pretty adeptly.
I am a talented singer.
I love it. We're going to lean into that.
And I'm going to roll performance for Miss Cleo right now as she demonstrates her singing telepathically in your head. Okay. She gets a 19.
Yes.
Plus 3 for a 22. You hear Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
Suddenly in your head. You're hearing. You are just blown away. Like you feel a tear coming to your eyes. It reminds you of carols the night before Christmas.
Well, that is quite lovely. I think we are well on our way.
I guess we're going to emerge from the woods. And you said it was a trapeze team. I don't want to distract them because that seems dangerous. But maybe the person warming up their spells.
So the sorcerer that was practicing the...
Yeah.
This man is blue-skinned. He's a very elegantly dressed simic with like long coattails, you know, has a little bit of a goatee, sort of like windswept hair, and a top hat on as he's working and preparing, doing this sort of like dress rehearsal. He looks to you and says, can I help you?
Yes, hi. We are prospective performers looking to ingratiate ourselves with the circus and perhaps gain a job. I'm the stone, and this is the sparrow, and we are a singing and strongman performance.
The stone and the sparrow? How quaint. We are always looking for new talent. Are those your actual names, or are they monikers?
Oh, those are monikers, not my given name, no. But I think for all intents and purposes, at least until we are hired employees, that we should be advertising ourselves at every opportunity.
Understood, understood. But for the sake of introductions, my name is Hector Eisenheim. I am the Sorcerer Supreme of the wonderful Mr. Magorium's Performance Center. And as you can see, I would be happy to introduce you to my colleagues, but I would like to know your name so I could properly greet you, please. And he extends a hand.
Oh, yes. I am Chris, and I extend my hand in... I know to take a little bit of the gas off this handshake, because he doesn't need the full.
Oh, yeah. This guy's like half your size.
But I am going to give some strength to it. Not in an injuring or crippling way, but I want him to know how strong I am by a handshake.
You can either roll charisma or intimidation. You can take your pick.
I'm not trying to intimidate him, but intimidation has a much better bonus. I'm going to go with that. Okay, so that's a 6.
He smiles as he takes your hand. And you see the smile is very clearly one of those, I see what you're trying to do, type of smiles. But he says, come here, single. I will show you around, and perhaps you would like to meet with Mr. Magoo about joining his circus before the show starts, or would you prefer to attend and see what you might be joining as an act, perhaps? Have you witnessed our performance before?
I have not witnessed the performance before, but I think that might be a very good way to inform myself about how this operation runs.
He is still holding your hand in the handshake, and he looks down at your hands, and then he looks up at you, and he says, it would be my pleasure to treat you as a VIP so you could properly research. And he just lightly strokes the inside of your wrist with his fingers before pulling his hand away.
A VIP, you say?
VIP.
I don't want to interrupt your warm-up or become a burden.
He puts his arm around your back, which, because of a difference in height, ends up being just above your lower back. And he says, trust me, I believe you are a burden I am very excited to bear. Let me take you around to the front. I will tell Sophie to give you the VIP box, which I believe is currently unoccupied for this evening's performance. Many people did not know that we would be leaving on such short notice, but however, business interests have driven us to make this our final show in the area for the night, so you're quite fortunate to appear for your audition, sir.
What surprise business dealings would make such a hasty retreat? Isn't this like a great area for such performance?
I will let Mr. Magoo tell you about that. Suffice it to say, we have certain talent management interests that dictates that we vacate the region in pursuit of new stars and launching new acts, which you could potentially find yourself in addition to.
As we are currently in a talent development phase, it is a perfect time for you to arrive.
So, since I failed so spectacularly at that handshake, I'm gonna do a little bit of a show for him.
I know you did not think much of my handshake just now, but I want to show you what you're working with.
And I'm gonna roll up into a one-armed handstand.
Okay, give me a roll on that.
Do you want athletics or acrobatics?
Give me athletics first, and then give me acrobatics for a little bit of sauce on it.
22 for the athletics.
Okay.
And 14 for acrobatics.
You roll up the flip forward into the handstand. It's very clean. It's very utilitarian. There's nothing like too showy about it, but it is smooth. It is graceful. It is clear that you have great control over your body. You're not just big. You're clearly like thoroughly conditioned. You do find him admiring your body up and down. And he says, yes, I believe that this will be very justified to put you into the VIP box. I do believe we have one other person who will be sitting with you, but thankfully there are two seats in the VIP box, so you will not have to worry. There will be space.
All right, well, that works. Miss Cleo?
Miss Cleo is nowhere to be seen.
That's not great.
I seem to have lost my companion. I don't think I can take you up with such a generous offer if I leave her behind. You know, the stone cannot proceed without the sparrow.
Oh, the singer. Oh, well, listen, let us get you situated. You will know where you are. She must have overheard you getting the offer for the VIP box. And it will be easy for her to find you if she knows where you are than you trying to find her.
Can I get a vibe check on him?
You can absolutely make an insight check on this guy.
That's an 8. Oh, boy.
He makes a certain amount of sense. Like, it is easier in the situation where you get separated from somebody in a confusing place. Like, if you know that the other person that you've lost knows where you are, it's best to stay put and kind of keep an eye out for them until you're sure that they clearly don't know where you are.
That's true. Can I see if there are footprints leading off any direction from me? Is there anything around me that would denote that she walked off? Because that doesn't seem very much like Miss Cleo.
Yes, you can absolutely make a survival roll or an investigation roll.
Survival. 11.
With an 11, what I will give you is that hung up on one of the supporting lines for one of the tents, you can see her garish rainbow clerical robe.
I'm sorry. I know that you are being so generous, and I put my hand on the small of his back, and that you see my talent. But I must find my companion before I proceed, for if she does not see the show like I do, I don't believe we can make a choice in joining the circus.
And he looks stricken. He looks heartbroken. He says, I'm so sorry. I merely thought I was trying to show you. You know, we are preparing for a show. It might not be the ideal time to talk to Mr. Magoo, but whatever you might need, you know, if however you are comfortable proceeding, you are the one who proceeded into the back area of the camp. I thought taking you to the VIP would be more comfortable for you to enjoy a show, but if there's somewhere else I could take you, I'd be happy to show you around. However, you are most comfortable.
Well, I mean, as you can see right there, that is Miss Cleo's garment. And while we were talking, I don't know what exactly has gone down, but
oh.
I cannot abandon a friend, because friends are the most important people in one's life.
He says, is this part of the audition? We do have after-hours shows without the children.
She has some skills that would be more suited for an after-hours show, for sure. But her singing is more of the general audience's performance.
Yes, we have shows both with the Kinder und without the Kinder. She would be welcome to audition for both.
If she can telepathically speak to me, is there a way to telepathically engage back with her? Is it a one-way street?
I actually can do that for you, as a matter of fact. Miss Cleo and I have kind of established a bond since she's reached out to me, too. If you don't have the ability to speak telepathically, which you don't, it's a little bit more difficult. But let me chat with her. I don't know if I can set up like a group call.
Abby, you're always so helpful. Are you picking up on the Sorcerer Supreme's vibe here?
You know, a little bit. It definitely seems like he keyed in on getting you in that VIP box after he learned your name.
Yeah, as if someone might be expecting me.
Which is very weird, considering that who should know your name except for me and Miss Cleo, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I mean, it's disconcerting, to say the least. Let's go ahead and try and open up a channel.
Yeah, you are able to communicate with Abby telepathically. But I will say that the Sorcerer Supreme is seeing you standing there saying nothing for an extended period of time.
Sorry, it's sometimes it takes a little bit for me to think through things. Is there a place I can sit down really quick? I don't mind joining you if the show has a second before it starts.
Of course. Would you prefer somewhere a little bit more quiet and isolated? I'd be happy to give you some privacy.
That would be quite lovely, actually. And then I can meet you back here to head to the VIP.
Absolutely. I will go and inform Mr. Magoo that we do have the VIP box occupied tonight with one additional guest, in addition to the anticipated guest that was already in the box. I will tell him about you. I will also try to locate your friend, and we will meet back here. If you are looking for privacy, the supply tents over there to the east near the outhouses. Don't go too close to the stinky outhouses. Just find yourself a nice quiet spot amongst our food and other supplies, and you should have the peace you need. Okay?
That sounds lovely. And again, the name's Chris. Chris Single. But you can refer to my stage name as Stone.
Okay. That is very good. Wunderbar. I will be back soon. I will meet you here.
He hustles off towards the tent that I mentioned. So I described three tents to you. He hustles off to the sort of like more stately tent that, you know, didn't have any activity around it, but also didn't have any boxes around it. And he disappears into that tent. Do you move to the area that he told you to move to, or do you go somewhere else?
He told me to go over to behind the latrines, basically.
Well, no, the latrines are all the way to the east of the sort of space that they've taken up for the carnival. And he advised you to head east towards them, but maybe, you know, keep your distance from them because he didn't want to send you somewhere stinky.
Is that towards the rectangular tent, the one where the guy was bringing the food platter into?
Yes.
That's where I want to head.
All right. So while the communication line is established, Abby begins speaking and says,
"Hey, Miss Cleo, we ran into a guy that we're not super sure about, and it seems like you might have picked up the same vibe a little bit faster because, you know, you got super naked and snuck away."
"Yes, the vestments and other clothing that the pixie dragons expressed themselves on was a bit of a hindrance to my moving stealthily. Thanks to it being twilight and my natural skin tone being a deep indigo bordering on purple, it is quite a deal easier for me to move stealthily while in the nude."
"Where are you now?"
"I am currently behind the long tent that they are using as what they call a training space. However, it more closely resembles a holding cell."
I'm assuming I walked into the red tent to have this conversation.
So if you try to walk into that tent, there's just like, you know, your standard arms crossed, sitting on a barrel, smoking a cigarette guy who just puts his hand up and shakes his head.
"Oh, sorry. Eisenheim told me to come in here to, there was a quiet space in here that I could make a quick connect with a friend."
He pinches a toothpick out of his mouth and says, "Eisenheim wouldn't have told you to come in here. Eisenheim would have told you to go and find somewhere else, so shove off and find a better spot for whatever jag-off conversation you're trying to have."
"All right. Seems fair. I like the cut of your jib. You seem pretty upstanding."
"Just doing my job."
"Aren't we all? Aren't we all?"
"I am at the rear of that tent, and I can hear you conversing with the sentry posted at the front."
"Can you make your way in?"
"Yes. I will have to get a little bit muddy in order to do so, but I believe I can squirm my way into the tent from the rear."
"I will create a distraction on this side, so in case you make any ruckus."
"Understood."
"All right, I'm going to start the show."
"All right, describe this distraction for me. Depending on what you're doing and how well you're doing it, I will ask you to make rolls based on your distraction."
"So I don't know if you've heard, but I'm the Stone. I'm a prospective performer. I mean, as you can see from my garish outfit, I'm trying to become part of the crew. Let me give you a little taste."
And I start flexing. I pop my top off. Abby, I'm assuming, can peel the armor half down so that my torso is exposed. And I'm going to start, like, strongman flexing. Like,
all right, we already know Chris is a beefy boy, but that sort of thing is just as much performance as it is training. So give me a performance roll for this distraction.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm going to use my inspiration.
Okay.
That's a nat 20. I went from a 2 to a nat 20.
Oh, boy. You hit the first pop, and that, like, totally late 80s movie thing where you hear the, bow, yeah, like,
do, bow, bow.
The bouncer, like, his jaw just drops, and, like, the toothpick hangs on for, like, a split second and then just flops out of his mouth. As you're doing all your spins, you're, like, aiming your muscle flexes like they're power beams, just like in the anime scene before, and you're shooting these power beams of bicep flex, and it hits somebody on the trapeze. It's almost as if she gets hit by an actual wave while she's flying in the air. She goes from, like, you know, front flip to, like, going into, like, a full corkscrew and just landing in the fire. Oh, and then everybody's just, like, heads are turning as you're, like, just shooting deltoid flexes and then back flexes around. And, oh, I think this is full on the anime episode where each time you spin, it's, like, slow motion and you can see, like, the five droplets, like, glimmering. So you do that spin and, like, you see a guy, the sentry in front of the red and white tent. He just gets, like, spun around three times, catches himself on one of the bars supporting the entrance to that tent. You just hear him while you're continuing flexing saying, "Hey, Tracy, you remember that new talent you were looking for? Come out here and get a load of this." And as you continue flexing, you see this little dragon's head that is about the size of a large dog comes out and it peeks around and it is pink and it looks at you and it just says, "That's exactly the kind of guy we need. Get him in here." This episode of D&D Versus features Nathan York as Chris Single. And yours truly, Yanato Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast, but you can support our podcast by signing up for our Patreon and getting access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes at you July 24th.